Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down real low. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Today's episode is brought to you by Doghouse Systems at doghousesystems.com. If you use the code FROGPANTS at checkout, you can get a 480GB SSD drive for a limited time while supplies last, absolutely free. Check out their fantastic rigs and wonderful computers over at doghousesystems.com today. On today's episode of The Instance, we've got a date with BlizzCon. What would you do if they shut down your vanilla server? We all thought Mythic was hard, but Mythic Plus sounds really hard. Overwatch gets ranked play, and they call it competitive. Will it be? Soldier 76 gets sidelined. We don't talk about the Tracer pose, your calls, emails, and more on this episode of The Instance.
I'm Jeff Kaplan, and you're listening to The Instance.
Listening to The Instance.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The Instance. This is The Instance episode 443. My name is Scott Johnson. I'm joined today by Willie Dills Gregory. Hello, Dills.
Hello, Scott.
Hey, man.
It's good to be here.
Yeah.
I feel like I just talked to you.
Not even that long ago. Yeah, it was like 12, not even, geez, what? Yeah, like 12 hours ago we were hanging out.
And it's good to see you again, you know?
It feels natural
to just talk to you every day. I think that's what we should do from
here. This is how it is with Ibbot. It's like, I don't know how that guy's not completely sick of me by now. I see him every
day.
Oh, he
is. He talks to me.
Oh, okay, good. At least he's getting it out of his system. The Europeans are both doing weird stuff. You got Patrick in Japan, and you got Dill.
Europeans are always doing weird stuff. Let's be honest.
Yeah, that's the truth. And you got, what's his name, the Terpster there, recovering from his time at the Video Game BAFTA Awards. So in their stead, we brought in another American. From America's Wang, ladies and gentlemen, it's Garrett Ryan Zirl. Hello, Garrett.
Well, Ishnu Allah, dorks.
Nice. You sound like you had a prepared statement to begin the show here, but
I prepared a statement. You pull out a little piece of paper, open it up.
Yeah,
open it up.
you guys, of course, know these chuckleheads from their fine work on The Angry Chicken, and of course, now for Garrett, 100 episodes of ITN Into the Nexus, which I was really glad to guest on yesterday with Dills, and we had Jeff Cannata, and we had you and Kyle, and that was a hell of a time.
That was some of the most fun I've had podcasting in recent memory. So thank you guys for coming on. It was a blast.
Yeah, it was really good. So you guys should check that episode out. It was a really great sort of state of the game kind of conversation. And if you're interested in Heroes of the Storm, that's a great place to do it. Oh, and by the way,
fun fact, 90 minutes of unscripted Heroes chatter.
Wow, yeah. that's pretty good.
Well, actually,
good.
I think you kicked off the initial discussion with the top of the... It was Heroes of the Dorm, and then we just never stopped.
Barely.
Yeah. And you're like, hey, Heroes of the Dorm, and then we're off and running.
Yeah. I think we may have mentioned one other, like, there's maybe one other thing in the news. I can't remember what it was, but like halfway down. Oh, it was double XP Tracer. For the weekend, or 50% XP boost for the weekend.
Yeah, you mentioned that. We talked about Tracer, but it wasn't like we were following notes or anything. It was just kind of where the conversation led us.
Yeah.
We just ended up at Tracer, yeah.
I don't want to freak anyone out, but people on the A-Move network and the FrogPants network, we tend to... talk from the gut, and that's what you get with our shows. So hopefully you enjoy this one today. There'll be a little World of Warcraft in there. We got some Overwatch talk a little bit later. So if you're here just for the Warcraft stuff, I don't know what to tell you, man. There's not a ton happening, but there is a little bit, and we'll get to all of that in the news. All right, let's talk about BlizzCon first. Fourth and fifth.
Yeah, it's coming, guys. Yeah. I'm so stoked.
Are you excited to get back down there and do all that?
Always. I'm always excited for BlizzCon, man. I get to hang out with everyone. It's so nice to see everybody. The con like really never disappoints for the most part. Even in a year where it opens up with Geek Is, I still have a great time.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like it just happened though, like 5 minutes ago? Because that's how it feels to me. I feel like we were just there doing this, and not that that's a bad thing, but it does. It literally feels like yesterday to me. November does
a bit. This year is weird though, because like last year when it happened, I had also just gotten married, and then right after it was over, we were on a plane to Maui and.
Oh yeah, this should be much more normal.
Particularly
for you.
Strange for me, sure. Specifically.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, this will be a much more relaxing trip for you, I'm sure.
Oh God, yes.
So here's the exciting.
But know, at this point, we just now expect it every year, and I think it's more of an esports event, and I think it will be. All the like announcements and everything that we've always expected from BlizzCon aren't quite as important because now there is essentially, well, at this point, there's two full seasons of stuff that culminates at BlizzCon, mm-hmm. and that will be every year, as far as I can tell, from here on out. So everything else is just kind of, okay, now we fill in the time with the cool band, and here's what's we're working on, and here's what's coming, mm-hmm. and it's just we all know what we're doing. Even the audience now. Mm-hmm. So we just show for BlizzCon, like, yeah, let's get it on. And, you know, it's like it's a well-oiled machine at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. And it's the esports focus is clear. If we're to make any predictions this early, and I know it's very early, we just got dates for the show, but I always like to do this when we find out when BlizzCon's going to be. Do we have any predictions based on what we know? What we know is we'll be playing Legion by then. So we'll have Legion sometime mm-hmm. this summer. At least that's the current plan. So that'll be out of the bag and happening. And surely at BlizzCon, there will be talk about upcoming content for said expansion. But given their recent uptick in how quickly they're trying to release content, I know they're always trying to do this, but it seems like maybe they're on the track to actually do this more often with World of Warcraft. You guys think it's crazy to think they may announce the next expansion at this thing? Or is that too quick?
No, it's not crazy. But it would probably just be a very rough sketch of what it is. At that point, we're still going to need... It's just two patches, an expansion, right, at this point?
Right.
So we're still going to need the second patch. So it's possible they announce whatever the second patch is and all that content. Mm. Or it's... And I don't think it's completely out of the question that they announce the entire next expansion.
Yeah. What do you think?
Could happen.
What do you think, Garrett? You think they're going to...
I would certainly like them to announce the next expansion. I wouldn't bet money on it. It seems like a stretch, especially with their development speed with World of Warcraft has not been peppy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
they're trying.
They want to be faster, right? But they just haven't gotten there.
Yeah, they're trying
They want to be fast. They've been saying that since the first BlizzCon ever. We're gonna try and increase the speed of our development, and it's never happened. They've never once. I don't think a WoW expansion has ever come out. At a time where it felt like it should have. I think it's always been about 4 to 5 months too late.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so let's look at it though. So we're at BlizzCon, and that is a post Warcraft movie world. That is a post Legion release world. That's a post Overwatch release world, and we're in the thick of the, you know, second, third, and fourth year of some of these other titles. And they're all very focused on esports and these tournaments and everything. I'm struggling a little bit to think about what that it to me that seems like a fundamental shift in the format without it being intended to be. In other words, when they get up on stage, will it be like Apple keynotes? We've got a new store opening in, you know, China, and here's our numbers, and off we go. And here's a small iteration to various products. That feels like maybe that's where we're headed.
We made Warcraft smaller and lighter and thinner. It's like, no.
I mean, I would be really surprised to see it go.
Warcraft has an 8-megapixel camera. Sorry.
We added 3 more pixels to the cod piece of your orc warrior.
Wow. Actually, I'm all in now that you say it that way. Give me some more pixels on my cod piece. But for real, like, it feels like there's just less to say, you know, like less for that. I don't mean we're back to the geek is moment, but of 2010, but we're definitely not in the world of. I mean, I'm forgetting about Diablo here. Maybe this is that year. Maybe this is the year Diablo's next big thing happens.
I don't think we'll ever hit that point. I mean, yeah, it might. If you're just a World of Warcraft fan or you're just a Diablo fan, you're going to have BlizzCons that disappoint you. But if you are a Blizzard fan, now with games like Heroes of the Storm and Hearthstone that are constantly iterated upon, I don't think there's ever going to be a year of BlizzCon where they don't have something new to show us, something to announce.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. It's I think at this point we have to forgo our fanboyism of one single game and just understand it is BlizzCon, not WoWCon, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think going the Apple keynote route will ever. That will never make sense for BlizzCon. BlizzCon is for the fans. It's not for, you know, shareholders.
Developers and, yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's not something you would just immediately stop telling tickets. Why would someone pay $200 to get up there and listen to Mr. Tuckton T-shirt tell you about the statistics?
Well, you're not...
I really do think we're going towards a direction where BlizzCon is just a big esports event,
yeah,
where people go just to see the culmination of these stories. They go to hang out with their friends who they know play the games. They go to, you know, do all the things that they want socially within this community, and they don't really care so much about the huge announcements and the massive moments. And we get what we want when we go there now. And what we want is we want to socialize with other Blizzard fanboys, really.
Do you think Blizzard, though, I mean, we say it's not for shareholders, it's for fans, but isn't it increasingly their showcase for shareholders? I mean, that's part of this. I don't think it's entirely for fans. It is. I mean, it is for us, for sure it is. And it definitely is a community-based thing, and it feels that way. But what they're also doing is planting their flag and going, look, major esports event coming at you. Yo, we got a stage full of people, and we got $1 million on the line. And all of that stuff matters to Activision Blizzard and their shareholders. Sure. So,
Do we know, have we ever talked on this show, and I've never even looked it up, do you guys know like the financials of just BlizzCon itself?
I mean, it seems
like a money-making machine.
Well, you'd think at $200 bucks a ticket and...
Well, just the line for merchandise that just is never ends.
It's just
a constant flow of stuff being sold.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
But you also, I mean, look at the event itself. That is not a cheap event by anyone's definition.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
I mean, it's like you're putting on four Iron Maiden concerts simultaneously, like with the amount of lighting and scaffolding and stages.
I mean, I'm sure the margins are thin based on that, but I also think the money coming in has to be just insane.
I'm sure they turn a profit, but I can't imagine. I still, just by looking at the size of it and the fact that they still haven't moved it to somewhere that can accommodate more than 24,000 people, mm-hmm, I don't see it like profit as its main goal.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. But I think that it's not something that they need to be them selling you the games or whatever. It in and of itself is another way for Blizzard Activision to be making money, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it's another part. It's like another division of Blizzard at this point.
It's
established and set in stone. You're not trying to sell people Diablo. People are going to buy Diablo. You're not trying to sell people anything. Like, people are going to buy the stuff now.
Chances are, if you drop $200 to go to BlizzCon, you probably already have Diablo.
Yeah. You're buying whatever Blizzard puts out. Yeah. But no, Scott, you bring up an interesting point in that there's so much that we know about now that will all be out by then, mm-hmm, and we don't know any of the stuff that's supposed to come after yet.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any date that happens after BlizzCon that we know that we have on the calendar for some Blizzard release of some sort.
Well, you know
there has to be something.
That old leaked calendar that came out a long time ago, and I remember it had something about like StarCraft Valkyrie in it that ended up being nothing, or it was an expansion with just a code name. But it was an interesting list because it kind of had, I want to say, Pandaria through Warlords, maybe. Lots of code names and lots of dates. But now that leaked calendar, I think, is essentially over. And we don't have any more hints at anything. So if they've got other cards up their sleeve about a new genre that they want to take on, or more mobile plans, or expansions to big franchises like Diablo, we have no idea. And it seems like all the cards are on the table. Like, everything's out for the most part, and it's all a known quantity, and we kind of know
Overwatch
what everything's going to
be out, all of it.
Yeah. So it's just a weird, I say this every year, I feel like, but I feel like this is a weird year for BlizzCon. Not in a bad way, just in a, it's very interesting to me to see what this looks like this year, because it's going to be different. Maybe it wasn't all that different from last year, because last year we were living in a world of known quantities. We just won't have as many of those things released by the time we get there this November. And, yeah, it's a crazy year. Weird time.
So the big stuff from last year, right, was really just Overwatch, right? I mean, that was
kind of. I think so. Yeah, like
that
what
was
else?
Big though.
It was huge. It was great. Yeah. And we've since played the beta a lot. And by the way, I want to recommend people, if you haven't done this, take a minute, go find those original gameplay videos that Blizzard released when they were first talking about Overwatch. Watch those now compared to what you're seeing in either video capture or your actual beta time in the game now. It's weird. That is a weird experience. It looks like everything's stiff and kind of like boring, and we all thought it looked super rad the first time we saw it, but they've been polishing that thing like a like a diamond, and it's looking really, really good. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we'll talk more about that in a sec. So 4th and 5th of November in Anaheim, California. The tickets go on sale in two batches. The first batch is on Wednesday, April 20th at 7 p.m. Pacific time, and Saturday, April 23rd, that following Saturday at 10 a.m. Pacific, and they're $199 each. I think that holds with last year's price. Were they less or more last year? Or the same? I know they weren't more.
They're the same. Okay. They've been, I think they've been $199 for this is the third year in a row, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's right. No virtual ticket information yet, but that's coming soon. I suspect it'll be the usual $49. You'll get the, you know, the pet and all the stuff you always get.
And all the DirecTV logos you can stomach.
Yep. Taking up half the screen, covering up all the avatars. Just like the worst, you know, think of the worst Twitch stream where someone decides their camera is the most important part and they put them fill out like half the screen. Sometimes it feels like those logos are doing that. So anyway, there's that. All right, let's talk about a big controversy swirling around the World of Warcraft. Ironically, it's not in any official capacity, but the Nostralarius server. Am I saying that right? Nostralarius. Nostralarius.
Nostralarius.
I don't know how they say it. Hey, guys, have a better server name. Anyway, it's getting shut down. This is a non-official, original vanilla WoW server that kind of took on a life of its own and became the number one place to go. There are reportedly up to 100,000 people using this not-sanctioned server, running vanilla software, people building characters, running the game, and so on. And it got shut down. So I'm going to read a little bit from the letter that they wrote to their community, which says this. Dear community, for over a year, you have been part of an extraordinary journey, a journey back in the early days of our beloved game, a journey in which hundreds of thousands of people took part in together, something that we had never seen before, either on retail or private servers. Together, we build a strong community, shared values, and common genuine interest for the wonderful game created by Blizzard. Yesterday, we received a letter of formal notice from U.S. and French lawyers acting on behalf of Blizzard Entertainment, preparing to stand trial against our hosting company OVH and ourselves in less than a week from now. It goes on to sort of explain some of that, but they have to shut it down is the bottom line. They're being forced legally to not have this server anymore. And as of 2300 hours server time on the 10th of April 2016, assuming the hosting company even keeps it up that long, the server goes down and there's no more. It caused a real big stink, and I wanted to talk about whether or not this is what does it mean? First of all, you've done something based on partly on nostalgia and part of it maybe on, you know, maybe there's a real strong belief by a bunch of players that vanilla WoW was the best state of the game and that's where they want to spend their time and they don't like where WoW has gone since. It's a fair argument to make if that's your argument, I suppose. But it's clearly against terms of service. It is absolutely not something Blizzard wants. It's their game they want to control. It's an online game. The whole point of it is to have servers they control, they add to and take from and everything else. Does the freak out have, I don't know, are these guys victims here because they did this thing? Like, I'm having a hard time. I feel for players who feel like they've got something that's being taken from them, but it was never yours to have, right? Like, it wasn't theirs to take in the first place.
They're just literally, pirating the, I don't know. I get it that it's sad for them because they had fun. They were enjoying themselves, you know? Mm-hmm. But there's not any, you know, maybe they can make the argument, well, we wouldn't be playing WoW anyway if we couldn't play it this way. So we're not really like taking anything away from, that might be an argument you could make. Mm-hmm. That now without the ability to play it this way, they won't play it at all. So it wasn't. You know, I'm sure that in their own mind, they think we're not taking money out of Blizzard's pocket because we're just playing it the way we want to and we wouldn't play it anyway.
Yeah,
fair enough. I mean, maybe that's true, but it doesn't really change the fact that to me, this is like if Blizzard just allows this, if Blizzard just says, yeah, OK, whatever, you can do that. That just basically tells people that they can just do whatever they want, right, mm-hmm. with their Blizzard stuff. And
that seems like a weird precedent.
Yeah, it just seems like you're supposed to do this as a company, right?
In the kind of Blizzard world we live in now, where all of their multiplayer games are, you know, always online kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, if we still had the type of world where we could all share our StarCraft disc at our LAN party one night and just play over our local area network, I would be surprised to see this news. But the fact that Blizzard's been cracking down on this for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the other thing is this one's only significant because it was such a large population in such a short amount of time.
Yeah.
And I think
I'm not saying I like it, by the way. I think these private servers are kind of cool, and I find it fascinating that they exist. It's definitely not something that's for me. Although, I don't know, who knows? Maybe if you told me, hey, Garrett, there's a server that hasn't gone past Lich King that has 100,000 people playing on it.
You might look.
I'd be tempted to go check it out.
Yeah, you might log on. You know, all you need is your client.
Right.
And their server does whatever it does. Or I assume it does. I don't know. Is there like a, I don't know enough about this, but maybe there's like some secret client you have to download, like that has the, I'm sure that's true because the code for the current game is not going to work. So they probably either have you install your vanilla discs again and that's all you ever do, like an unpatched, 1.2 or something.
I've never played on any of these servers, but from what I hear, there's a lot of weird stuff going on because it isn't, you know, it isn't supported in the same way. Mm. And it's kind of patchworked, put together. And actually, someone in the chat room, I think, just said it. I've seen screenshots. It looks laughably bad. Yeah.
Well, so,
people were having fun. I get that. And I don't think these people are bad people for wanting to play vanilla WoW. I don't think any of that. But I also think that Blizzard is in their right to shut this down.
And they're going to. This is, if they're a corporation with interests that aren't, we want to support your nostalgic play of having a server. And I know it's not as simple as that, but in Blizzard's case, it is. For their business and the way that model works, why wouldn't they? Why would they let this stand? Like, if you were them and you were that company, you'd shut you down too. So everybody wants to treat this like some kind of big anarchy moment. And I'm having a little trouble with that. And I know that's just the internet in general, and I'm not trying to be naive to that, but guys, it's just, what did you expect them? I guess that's what I would ask, is what did you expect?
I think they knew this day was coming.
Yeah.
Right? I think the people there who were playing it knew this day was coming. It sucks for them, but you can't really be surprised that your illegal playing of this game without paying. And actually, you don't pay to play on these servers at all. I think there's no monthly anything. There's no whatever. So
it may take donations or something to keep servers.
I'm sure
up.
They took donations because there's 1,000 people. You need some serious servers, but.
Yeah.
I'm again not surprised. Blizzard's completely within their right. I personally would have liked it better if they just left them alone. Who cares? Because I'm definitely of the mind, like, I'm pretty sure the people who went this far out of their way to go play this bizarre backdoor version of the game probably weren't going to go play regular WoW anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, yeah.
It's like, a precedence thing. It's just a precedence thing. Here's a good example. If Steve-O from Jackass, remember him? If Steve-O's on a skateboard and he's flying down a road naked as fast as he can, trying to avoid traffic, and one of the times he gets hit by a car, we shouldn't be surprised. So I guess that's what I'm saying. It's a fun thing. It sounds great. It looks good. It's funny on tape. But at the end of the day, you kind of knew the risks. And I think these guys had to know the risks. Like, you're living in a world of laws that are in place, and they have the legal right to shut you down. And I don't know why anyone's acting shocked or surprised. That's my
opinion. Well, now it also sounds to me like Blizzard isn't necessarily going after them monetarily. They're saying, we will if you don't shut it down. But here, if you shut it down, we all walk away.
Yeah, they're not being a-holes about it. They're basically just like a cease and desist. They're saying, if you stop now, then we won't.
Yeah.
You know, we're not
going to. And I think if we really look at Blizzard overall, they've been pretty good in my eyes about a lot of things. And at this point in the gaming world, it's very strange. Do you guys remember when Let's Plays and all that kind of stuff started?
Mm-hmm.
And there was just a big argument about whether, like, does the company that made the game own this footage? Am I allowed to now go make money, like showing me play your video game?
Mm-hmm.
And now I get the money from that video.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to a point where, yes, you do get the money. But like, how far do we go where the game is just not owned at all by the company, right? How far do we go here? It's like, oh, well, you can actually make servers of my game, put it out there for people to play our game, and we get nothing from that. Like, that seems like that's just a bit too far.
Well,
there's some legal
precedents in the past for trying to preserve parts of, whether it be commerce or whatever. Like, if people want to preserve old jazz records from the 20s, like wax cylinders, that seems like that's in the public good to do that. It doesn't necessarily.
Well, there's the 100-year rule, right? Like,
there's definitely that. Yeah.
Public domain or whatever.
But see, that's the problem. And I guess what? I think the internet will find a way. So I'm not that worried about this. But games are in a place where, because of online connectivity being standard for a lot of games, I mean, that was an uproar in 2012. Now it's just kind of standard practice. So many different games do that. How will you preserve a particular year of Madden or how will you preserve a particular build of World of Warcraft? And then, what, you know, think about how many variations that could actually be. Is someone keeping track of the alpha state? Is Blizzard doing it? Should someone else? Should we even be worried about having historical snapshots of this stuff in a tangible way?
Yeah, that's the conversation about the around this that really intrigues me, which is this kind of like digital, you know, archival movement, because I think there should. I think this, to me, Blizzard should see this and be like, hey, there's a market for this. Maybe we should offer this officially through us.
Yeah, I
mean, maybe, but if it's 150,000 people and the game still has millions, right? It's a drop in the bucket, essentially. But I see what you're saying, and I think that there is something there for sure that people like this. And the people,
like, if you think about it going forward, I mean, I'm sure there's got to be a way where there's probably not a lot of extra work for you to do it. I mean, it's probably be a pain now to go back if they don't have stuff like that saved. But I mean, if you can have a stable version of the game that you only need to, you know, update a little bit for graphics drivers and new OSs, but for the most part, nothing really changes.
Well, they've got that. They've got that essentially that classics division now, right? Where they're doing
right. You know, I mean, we just saw Warcraft a patch for Warcraft 3 and Diablo 2 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, first check patch in vanilla WoW. Let's do it. Let's go.
Yeah,
150,000 people can't be wrong.
You know, that's a really interesting point, a point of view, actually. In 20 years, what does Warcraft even look like? It probably looks like the most ancient thing ever, just like, you know, Lost Vikings looks really ancient now or whatever. So it's not, I don't think it's that crazy to think that, in theory, Blizzard could either sell that or have that as this old ancient thing that you could run in a browser or whatever 3D holographic thing we're using then.
I personally think it would be awesome. I mean, the only reason I'm siding with Blizzard on this is because that they are correct. They are right now in this.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the other people are wrong. You know what I mean? Like, there's not, like, the other people just wanted to play WoW. They wanted to play it the way that they wanted to play it.
Right.
Yeah.
That was the only way to do it. Right. Yeah. So they're not wrong for that. Mm-hmm. It's just that they're not right. I don't know. It's a weird thing. I don't think there's
what they want. What they want is a noble thing. What they can legally have is very different right now.
Yes.
And Blizzard gets to
make
the call. I
don't fault them for wanting what they want. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Imagine if they said,
just because it's illegal or whatever, no one should have it. Because screw that. I think lots of illegal things people should have.
Yeah.
But in this particular case, I understand why Blizzard went after this.
Dills, could you go deeper down that hole? What illegal things do you think people
should hold that at 4 minutes and 20 seconds, you can tell us in the show here. 420.
Cuban cigars. That's what I was talking about.
Oh, okay. All right.
Cuban cigars. Okay.
But no, that's a really interesting point. It's all about precedent setting, in my opinion. If Blizzard said today, you know what, have your vanilla servers. This is great. We think you guys are rad. Because they probably actually kind of do. Like, internally, if you ask Blizzard guys, they're probably like, that's kind of cool they're doing that. They probably would do it. But the precedent set from that would mean all sorts of problems. Like, hey, I just bought Overwatch. I'm going to make my own custom server. Going to have to jank it around a little bit to make it work. But I got it working. And guess what? On that server, there's all this stuff going on that you never get in the other game. And pretty soon
you want more tracer butt? We've got the tracer butt
exactly.
server.
All the tracer butt you can have. I almost said eat. I won't say that.
Oh, wow.
I know. I went there and didn't mean to.
Family show.
Any clean tag. When you give us a 1-star review, because we don't talk about WoW enough, remember, clean tech. Anyway, so that's a thing, and I thought it was interesting.
It is interesting, yeah.
I find it really interesting as well.
If this is the beginning of Blizzard saying, well, we're just taking back vanilla WoW?
Oh,
what if this is the step in that?
It could be. That could be them saying, look, this is our classic game to re-release, not yours. Okay.
Do you think, though, if they did, let's say Blizzard actually puts out vanilla WoW.
Yeah.
There is a part of me that thinks that some of these people just wanted to kind of play this version because this was them sticking it to the man a little bit.
Yeah.
If Blizzard put it out, they'd be like, this isn't the vanilla WoW I wanted.
I will bet
you didn't quite give us exactly vanilla WoW. You changed the, you know, whatever. The graphics are updated.
I'll bet it's 75% of those 100,000 people have a little bit of that in them. A little bit to a lot. There's some range of I'm sticking it to the man, or they changed too much, or my memory of the game was better, and this is how I'm going to get back what I want, you know?
It's like when you're a little kid and you do something you're not supposed to, and you get that feeling, ooh, I got away with it.
Yep,
see?
Yeah, I like that
getting
feeling.
Getting away with it is part of
but
the
But then 100,000 of your friends show up to get away with it with you, and that draws just a little bit of attention.
That's the other thing. Keep it a little more quiet, guys, you know?
That's what I look at this. I'm like, Everyone here, I think, is technically right. Blizzard's 100% within their right to shut this down. I think these guys, they're totally fine. I get it. You just got too big.
Yeah.
You just got too big. I think if they, we were looking at like 5,000 people, I don't think this would have made the news. Well,
chat room was saying that it was 150,000 on this server, but playing vanilla WoW across all the servers is like closer to 800,000 or something like that.
So more.
Somebody said that number in chat. I don't know exactly where.
But look at this.
Mike at Apollo, 800,000 unique accounts.
Okay, so if that's the case, I don't know where you're getting those numbers, but let's say that's the case. Think about what that means for WoW in general. Like, this is almost a problem Blizzard wants, because what it means is they're the biggest thing MMO's ever had. It's the best we ever could do. And they're still the biggest MMO despite being halved by number in the last year. And the fact that they have more players playing on illegal servers than EverQuest has playing total on their legal servers is kind of insane to think about. So this is an embarrassment of numbers kind of problem for Blizzard. And I think people were just looking for something to get riled up about, to be honest, because there's just not a lot going on exactly.
Well, I mean, I talked about this when we had the whole conversation with Patrick, and some people tweeted at me about that they really enjoyed that. But the back and forth about why all these changes that we've talked about on the show that have happened over years, these incremental kind of changes, have taken the massive multiplayer part out of World of Warcraft in a way, because now you just queue and you never leave your home city, and you go from the bank to the mailbox and back to the bank, and then you click a button and, you know, and then you're in whatever thing you want to do. Now you don't ever leave your garrison. Like, you know, it's just all of the changes that they've made have been these kind of little quality of life changes. Then over time, it's not the massively multiplayer thing anymore. And that's what I think these people are seeking out, right?
It made the world, they have made the world feel small. And there has been a little bit of pushback on that from Blizzard, case in point, flying mounts. You know, we're never going to have the Cataclysm issue
again. Can they
take
away the queuing? Can they ever get back to, like, there was a point in World of Warcraft where if you didn't have people to play with, you had to seek out the people to play with. And now no one plays with anybody. Everybody's just an anonymous. That's just the warrior.
If you're not raiding, like if you're not specifically raiding with your friends, you're right. What other part of the game is massively multiplayer other than, hurry up, we need to get this Corehound mount so everyone camp the giant dude out there?
And the people yelling at you to get kicked from the group or whatever because you're not doing enough DPS in Raid Finder. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that's basically the multiplayer experience now. I think that's what a lot of people are not enjoying anymore.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. The way that you had to move around the world for everything in vanilla and in Burning Crusade. That's why when I watch the Warcraft movie trailer, I get excited because I recognize the locations that they're at. It's like, I remember I had to, take a damn Griffin through Deadwind Pass every time I wanted to go raid Karazhan, and that's now burned into my mind. They feel like real places to me. But if the movies go on and eventually end up on Draenor, I don't have a really good sense in my mind of the layout of Draenor like I do for Outland and for Azeroth.
Well, they'll have to shoot Draenor similar to Batman v Superman, where basically they just go from scene to scene with no rhyme or reason why they got from one place to the next.
Yeah, and then and then one orc and another orc going to talk about their mom's name.
Yeah, exactly.
Your mother's name is Agra?
No way. Same with mine. Let's be friends.
Why did you say that name?
Oh, let's be friends, Garrosh.
It's the freaking worst. All right, let's talk about Mythic Raiding. There's some bunch of stuff happened between last time we did the show and now regarding what is being referred to by Blizzard as Mythic Plus Raiding or Dungeons. So here's the deal. Mythic Halls and Valor are open for testing, is open for testing on the PTR right now. You can access it by setting dungeon difficulty to Mythic, speaking to the venerable Nexus Lord Don John Raid Sr., then talking him up, blah, blah, blah. He'll send you to the thing. Now, here's the deal. When you go in there, you'll find the dungeon is a little tougher than heroic, and it's on a weekly lockout. You'll drop loot, or it will drop loot once the loot is hooked up. Pretty similar to the way Mythics and Draenor work today, nothing to get too excited about. And then they said this. What's odd about this thing is this little challenger's pedestal sitting there near the start of the zone. And you go over there and you decide if you want to click that thing and affix a bunch of challengey stuff to yourself. So imagine, I'm trying to think of a good way to compare this. It's like it's a new little layer of hard mode or harder mode for Mythic players who really, really want to go for the ultimate challenge. There's six layers of it. And it's things like, imagine basically debuffs So your whole team suffers from, I don't know, some kind of plague the entire time, and they have to fight through it. They actually detail those here. Let's see.
It's like Diablo Greater Rift.
Yes. Yes. That's before. Exactly it.
Yeah. That's, and you're just basically, as you move up the torment levels, instead of moving up torment levels, you're debuffing your own.
It's like you're adding negative affixes against yourself.
Yeah. And if you succeed, your keystone will be upgraded to the next power level or by multiple steps. If you really crush the timer, if you're using a fresh keystone, i.e. the one that hasn't been used to start a failed run at that power level, you also find a loot chest waiting for you at the end. It'll be empty, but imagine that has a ton of loot. This is just for testing. It's empty. When the game launches, it'll have it in there. At power level 3, you'll see your first affix modifier on the keystone. At level 6, you will see a second. But apparently, it's really, really hard. Like, really hard. And those who have already been testing it are kind of freaking out about it. So, for example, available at level 3 plus, you get tyrannical. Bosses have significantly more health and damage. Another one you can affix is bolstering. Non-boss enemies will buff nearby allies' health and damage when defeated. Yeah, this feels like the way that those greater rifts work, honestly.
But this is good because, I mean, for people who want a challenge, here's your challenge. For people who don't care, you don't have to do it.
I think it's great.
I like this. I want more. I want more progression within the game in all facets, right? And I think that's what a lot of people are talking about when they talk about right now the game has what feels like less end game than it used to. Mm-hmm. But really, the end game just used to take longer, right? And I think that's the argument that a lot of people are missing is that it's not necessarily that there's less end game. It's just that we get to the end of it faster now because of all the tools put in place, you know. Mm-hmm. There's less running around and all that kind of stuff. There's just more queuing up and going. Mm-hmm. So the more end, like, I think at this point, Blizzard has to just add more levels and more levels and more levels to everything to really up that end game and give the top end players the feel of progression mm-hmm. past just the normal hard stuff. It has to get really hard.
Yeah. And this all sounds very punishing, and that's what a lot of people want. It's not really my bag
punishing
of chips.
Rewarding.
Yeah. It's not really my bag of cheese exactly, but I understand the people who want that. So I say go for it. All right. We're going to talk a bit about Overwatch. Ranked play is in. They call it competitive. And I really like what we're seeing. I think it's pretty great so far. Kaplan had a bunch of stuff to say about it in a developer video. He also said something in the video that he kept talking about the perspective of the game from a viewer, not a player. It just kept dropping a little conversation like this. And I think it's not an overt admission, but it sure does seem like they're very interested in going as esports as possible with Overwatch. And he just kept saying things like the point of view of the watcher. It's not fun to watch a match end with one of those timer runs. We'd rather see a sudden death match on a control point or whatever. So people viewing the game are going to want to watch this or that. And I kept thinking, dude, you're basically, I mean, that is good. I think that they're basically just laying it out as plain as day that they want this to be a competitive, watchable, broadcastable esport.
Sure.
When they announced it two BlizzCons ago, and they had a shoutcasted game with what was clearly already built observer mode, there was no doubt in my mind.
Yeah,
especially after going through Hearthstone when that came out without one, and then we're all sitting there for months on end screaming, "Where's our observer mode?"
Yeah.
And then we've got Overwatch announced, and they even during the announcement said, "Hey, it's not coming out anytime soon." Yet they already have an observer mode.
Yeah.
In a brand new, game that they built from scratch.
Well, they learned a lot from Hearthstone, I think, because not giving us one at the beginning, and then the one that we ended up getting is clearly kind of shoehorned in because it wasn't built to include it in the first place.
Yeah, it still
needs a lot of work. But this Overwatch one, I don't know if you guys have messed with it. They did some improvements to it in the last patch. The Overwatch Observer is really, really nice. And you get to kind of use it just as a player. Let's say if you join a party, you're not in the party yet.
Yeah.
They're already in a game or something. You just jump in and you're observing the match. Mm-hmm. And it feels really, really natural to be jumping around from player to player. And also, of course, Blizzard has to look at CSGO and understand that shooting games are a huge esport. And it just is a genre that works very well. So how are we going to make sure that we jump right in and are ready to compete?
Yeah, for sure. I guess I was just surprised to hear everything was kind of coded in this language about viewers. And I just, I don't know, in my head, it's like, oh, the developers and designers are so focused on how the thing plays that someone else will work on the logistics of how do we make this a broadcastable, you know, casty game. And it seems like it's baked in. Like, they're all very interested in it from the get-go, which is good. Go ahead.
I think we're going to see more of this as we go forward with any you know, AAA studios that are putting out games that they think is going to be competitive, because esports, it's a thing now. It has arrived. It is, if you are a PC gamer of any sort, you've probably at least seen one Twitch stream in your life. So I think that's, you know, that's something you're going to consider, because you don't want your sport to not be fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. What's the point of that? Exactly. That would suck.
World of Warcraft suffers from right now. Mm-hmm. You know, we've entered a world where the game can't just be fun to play anymore, mm-hmm. right? The game has to be fun to watch now.
Yeah.
And that is now the landscape of gaming. Mm-hmm. Twitch had a lot to do with that, but I think it was just kind of inevitable, you know?
Yeah. We were getting
all the ex-girlfriends of the world who sat there for hours watching their boyfriends play GTA were like, you know what? We got to do something about this. And I think secretly, there's a secret society of ex-girlfriends somewhere. Yeah. That have decided we have to make video games fun to watch.
They're
so here we are.
A bunch of extra money from it. In some ways it kind of bugs me that there are certain, especially indie titles, that are clearly made so that a YouTuber will play it on their channel. Like the game design is influenced more by which one of these will PewDiePie play and not so much which one of these will be fun. Because sometimes
They don't even have to finish the game, really. It just has to be quirky and weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes I worry about that.
Scream a lot.
Yeah. I worry about that a little bit because it influences design, but not in this case. I mean, we're talking
about... There's a big argument. I don't know. Did we talk about it on this show? Maybe we did, but that these kind of linear games suffer because people don't even buy the game. They just watch someone do a playthrough.
Oh, yeah, we did talk about that. Yeah.
And then they're like, cool, satisfied.
Yeah.
I saw the story.
I know what it was. It was that the guy that did the indie game about his son having cancer, which was a pretty interesting, compelling game. But they were not upset, but basically they were laying out the numbers saying, when you guys play our games on YouTube or whatever, and you play it to completion and you've provided perhaps 100,000 people with the experience, they have no reason to go get the game. You made a bunch of money from your YouTube channel. We got nothing. We sold the game once.
Isn't that maybe this is too simplistic of an analogy, but isn't that a bit like an author being pissed off at Wikipedia?
Yes and no, because if you're making a video game, it's a full-time focus, right? And your only way of being compensated for that game so that you can make more games is to get paid for that.
Right.
If your book... So let's use your example. If you're an author and your book ends up, Andy Weir's entire Martian book ends up on Wikipedia, yes, that's a problem. Because now everyone's reading his book for free that he created, and now he can't be an author anymore. If it's an author who said, I don't know, who had just some commentary about why he doesn't like Charlie Sheen and that ends up on Wikipedia, I don't think it's in the same category. But I just think anytime you want to, I mean, I don't know what you got, you and I and Dills and everybody, you know, that we work with, we're all involved in the business of lots and lots of free content for a comparatively small return. But we do it A, out of passion, but B, it's enough that we can figure it out, right? We can make it work.
Right.
Imagine putting out something like, you know, a book where you have got a ton of costs involved, not just digital, but all the costs of printing actual physical books and everything. And if somebody could just read it to you, if that was popular to just read you a book on YouTube, that would suck for that author, because why go get his book now? Now you've had an audiobook version of it for free. Nobody paid for anything. Everything should be free, anarchist internet. But in the end of the day, they got to get paid. So I guess I'm...
There is a beautiful world out there where, you know, everybody doesn't have to get paid, mm-hmm. but we're nowhere near that.
Yeah, we're not there yet.
Everyone got to get paid.
Yeah. Our utopian society is still, coming, but it ain't here yet. Star Trek.
It's a long ways off. It'll be after all of us are gone.
I mean, even Star Trek had to backpedal. They had, you know, Next Generation, nobody had to worry about money. Nobody got paid for anything. Everything's replicated. It's just all about exploring and doing good in the universe. And then they turn right around with DS9 and everyone's got to worry about gold press latinum and people smuggling shit.
I know. What was up with that?
Yeah.
Suddenly trading. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I don't know.
They're going to the bar all the time. Like, I don't know.
It's maybe never a future we get is what I'm getting at. We'll see. I'm trying to be positive about it. We'll see.
If you guys lived in that future, would you join the Federation?
I mean,
be an ensign and go to, you know,
if the Federation
the
was
academy and all that.
This is the problem. If the Federation is basically the government, I guess they're not though. Like, how? What are they? Because the government is
they kind of are. They're like the UN or something. But if the UN was something everyone actually connected with, I don't know.
You just
it's
have
weird.
To trust it, and that's all. And that's the tricky part because no one trusts politicians. Nobody trusts.
It's like the government.
It's hard to consider in the day and age that we are currently living in.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Like, it's hard right with now, our incredibly cynical view of the government to consider that. Personally, I would just be sitting there really angry that we ended up in Star Trek future instead of Star Wars future.
Yeah.
Well, that's just a different story because Star Wars future is more like swashbuckling and you know, smuggling and all that. It's just a very different version.
Yeah, you need credits to live in that world, man.
Yeah, see, I watch Star Trek and to me Star Trek just seems like propaganda made by the villains in the Firefly universe. Yeah. It's like, no, see, our giant unified corporation is we're doing good in the universe, but I'm sure there's just some dude flying possible. Around in a,
yeah.
There's some Nathan Fillion out there that they're just not focusing on who's actually oppressed by all of them.
Well, there's definitely pirates, yeah. But it's always funny when they show the people, you know, so like they'll show like someone's parents or something just live a peaceful life where they wear nothing but like weird cloaks all the time and moccasins or whatever. And then they come out of their house just to get blown up or something in some terrible tragedy.
Yeah.
And that's their life is, I guess they're, you know,
yeah.
They're just making a lot of Earl Grey hot.
There's some nice ideals in Star Trek, but if you really start breaking it down, you're like, oh yeah, there's some missing pieces here in this here puzzle.
Yeah, exactly. What's really going on here?
Yeah.
It seems a bit like basic human nature gets kind of glazed over a bit.
Well, as Boba Fett said, he's no good to me dead. Let's see. Let's move on to... Oh, so here are the requirements for you to play in competitive in Overwatch. You need to be level 25. Kaplan says that's seems like a nice number. They're, you know, nothing's final because they're still in beta. But
it does.
Feels good to me.
It doesn't take that long to get to 25 if you're really playing.
Yeah, you know? and it's enough time to be good enough, I think, at 25 to start entering the fray.
You've seen all the heroes, you know.
Yeah, it's just so you've put in enough time to have a decent grasp on the game as a whole, so you're not jumping into your first competitive game being like, what's a payload map, guys?
Yeah,
can someone explain this to me?
That's the worst. Nobody wants to be doing that.
No,
and,
you don't.
And trust
be,
me, you'll be you having so much fun getting to 25, you won't care. It's gonna be fine.
Yeah.
We'll handle groups of any number. So we want a solo queue. Great. You want to do 2, 3, 4, 5, or even 6? No problem. They feel confident enough in both their numbers and their matching system that they'll be fine with whatever those groups are. So I hope that holds. Given the struggles they've had with that in Hero League in Heroes. Attack and defend maps mean you have to stay for the full rotation, so you can't just leave after an attack or you will dock yourself. You need to hang in there and play both attack and defend. The way it works is if the attack... So on a map where it's, you know, move the payload, for example, if you're moving the payload and you win on the attack but lose on the defend, the tiebreak happens when you end up on one of the control points and it will be random and they do a sudden death overtime on a control point. Now, I don't know. He wasn't real clear about this. I don't know if that means you're just put on the spot and it's like overtime with a little fuse, like when you're contesting a point in the game normally at the end of a match, or if he means you're going to play a full control point match as the sudden death. That was a little bit nebulous in his video, so I'm not sure how that's going to work. Gotcha. Anyway, seems cool. What else? 3 out of 5 on control maps. So for that competitive mode, that's how you'll play that. You'll need to win at least 3 out of 5 in those. Progression, they have 5 tiers of progression, 5 divisions per tier. You start as Division 1 Challenger and work your way up. They have the top one known as Heroic. And the way Heroic works is more of a rank system. So once you hit Heroic, you then get to be Heroic rank 1, 2, 3, 4, and on.
Gotcha. This seems really grindy, guys.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
Yeah.
It seems less, I don't know, it seems a little more in line with like the old school StarCraft one, because when StarCraft first launched, we had bronze, silver, gold, platinum, diamond. That was 5 tiers.
They also said that it's monthly seasons, at least is what they're going for.
Yeah.
And if it's monthly seasons, somebody broke down the numbers on this. You'd have to win 40 times to get out of Challenger. So if that's how it works, and you can't lose ranks there, but when you get up to the point where you can lose ranks, how many games are you actually going to have to win to get to like the top level? It's going to be
Let's say it's 10-minute games on average. I know that's not exactly right, but let's say it's 10-minute games on average. You've got to play 40 of those. That's 400 minutes. Let's divide that by 60. But
it's actually closer to 20 minutes or something because you're going to play two maps, right? Like you attack and defend or whatever. You play the same map twice.
Good point. Yeah, there's going to be a lot more then. But you're talking about maybe up to,
I don't
know, 12 hours. That's like 12 hours of gameplay.
But if what they're going for is only the people who play the game all the time get to the top, similar to, say, Hearthstone, then this will work. This will do that.
Yeah.
But the rest of the people are going to feel a little bit like there's no real point in playing competitive, and they'll just kind of play for fun and whatever. So I don't know if this is going to be what the version ends up looking like that we get in live play. I feel like there's going to be some alterations to this.
That sounds extreme. I didn't see the statistics you're mentioning. 40 games just to get out of the first tier seems awful. And if this doesn't take into account any type of MMR, and every month you are just reset to the bottom of the barrel like Hearthstone.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also it's not even 40 games. It's 40 wins. So if you have a round of 50% win rate, that's 80 games.
80 games. Yeah.
Oh, to get out of the first tier.
That's like 24 hours of gameplay.
That's insane. That's an unrealistic expectation of your player base.
It kind of is. Also, now, it isn't for me if you say that seasons are longer, but when you tell me they're a month, then it seems insane. Like, if you told me seasons were every quarter, I could go, oh, okay, well, that's four quarters a year. I kind of get that, and if you're dedicated, I could see that being accomplishable. But every month doing that, I don't know if I can do that. I know I can't
I would like to see. I would like to see something where the top players are clearly the top players, and they get to go play against each other, and it's very separated out, but I hope that we don't end up with this Hearthstone. Everyone resets. Now I'm playing against, you know, Siegel or whatever, and like all these top guys. I don't want that.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to, you know, get to a point where everyone kind of separates up, you know, and then we stay separated until I either jump leagues or they drop leagues or whatever it might be. But the way it's looking right now, it's more of like the stars in Hearthstone, and I'm not sure that really meant that gels well with this type of game.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, listen, the StarCraft II ladder system has its issues, but
sure.
I don't know. I just keep coming back to that because, you know, if you ended up in gold, you trusted the system. You believed that that's where you belonged because the pro players were in Grandmaster. There mm-hmm. was no question. Like, that part of the system did not fail. It took into account the like how good you are, and that's where you ended up. So every season, you didn't have to just grind games to get that little graphic over your name that makes you show your friends that you're not complete trash at this game.
Mm-hmm.
There's something about that I like. I mean, obviously it helps my play style where I don't get to play just one game. I have but no interest that, in playing just one game.
Mm-hmm. It's the game quality is better, I think, when you start the season playing against people of your skill level. There's not this period of time. Because right now, you know, think about what Hearthstone kind of forces people to do. I think a lot of people just take off the beginning of the season, right? Yeah. They wait for all the good players to get out of their lower ranks because they know that they will, and then they start to actually play. And you don't want to be encouraging your player base to not play your game. I think your ranking system is doing a negative thing if that's the case.
I really hope
that they do something similar to StarCraft here in that tiered level.
Mm-hmm. You also can't, when you're challenger level, the lowest one, you can't drop any lower. You don't lose points. It's a bit like, it's like Hearthstone when you're rank, whatever it is, 25, and you don't want to, you know, you're not going to drop until you get into the numbers where you start dropping, and that happens at the next level. So you can drop back down to challenger from the next level up, but you can't ever drop while you're in challenger any of those points or any of those sub tiers. When you get up to the highest ranks, though, all bets are off. You know, you start losing. I don't know. Maybe they want to just really segregate the hardcores from the not because there is very compelling play happening in quick matches. Like, I don't want people to walk away or think that quick match in this game is like most quick matches. If it holds that they're going to have good matchmaking and however their MMR behind the scenes stuff works, I don't know. But that's a very compelling competitive game experience in its own right. And the results or the rewards are also really strong. They're not as the rewards, for example, are not as strong and competitive. You made a point of saying, I cannot emphasize enough that we think the rewards of this competitive mode are the competitive mode, in that we're providing a thing for you to compete this hard with those who are of your similar skill, that it's a reward unto itself. Whereas most of the rewards, skins and credits to buy more skins and all the stuff you're going to get cosmetically, most of that stuff is going to stay and remain in Quick Match. So I feel like maybe they're just trying to create a real divider here and just say, hey, hardcores, yeah, this is for you. Hey, everybody else, here's this.
Well, then we still need to see what the actual reset, if it is monthly seasons, really looks like. Because if it's a full reset, that's not doing that at all. Mm-hmm. It's not dividing the player base. It's everyone comes back, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm totally fine with the fact that you level up to get skins and stuff like that. That's fine. You could separate those two things. In competitive play, I can see the ranking just being the reward. But I really think if they're going to do one-month seasons, we need to have you come back only a certain amount. Some sort of divisions that the good players just never end up playing, the really bad players, or even average players. But the one thing too is people complain about the matchmaking now, and we can't really judge that at all until there's more players playing the game too.
Right.
So everything is just kind of still up in the air. All we can really do is just guess what it's going to look like.
Well, you may have been wondering what the hell happened with Soldier 76 and guessing what that might have been. Turns out there was a funky bug with his new skins, and they pulled him out of the game, and that was weird. So I was playing the other night, and I was like, this is not, I don't feel right not having him in the roster. And it's not even like I was going to play with him that night, but not hearing a guy yelling, I've got you in my sights every, minute and a half was really disheartening. So glad he's back.
It also made Farrah really strong.
Yeah.
there was nobody who could shoot Farrah out of the sky with reliability. So
yeah.
He was everywhere.
I did what I could with my hook, but it's not enough in the end. And Soldier 76 was missed. We're all soldiers now because he wasn't there. anyway.
I like his new skin, though. Made me wish some of the skins had different voice packages, because I want to slap on the Commando one, and I want him firing off Arnold one-liners, man.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah,
he's dead tired.
He's all, he's all camoed up and looking like a badass. All the recent skins look really great. I'm really pleased with the Junkrat stuff. The last two have been really, really cool. The game just continues to look amazing, and despite a few bugs here and there, it's solid as ever. But I guess the bug, for those who are wondering why he wasn't in the game, I guess it made him invisible in certain cases.
Yeah.
And
that's essentially what was happening. His legendary skin made him invisible, and
it's just camouflage doing what it should be doing.
Oh, is that
sure?
It? Okay.
The camouflage is working.
Yeah.
It's just weird to see him sidelined. I'm glad he's back, though.
Do you think we're ever going to get a really stealth hero in Overwatch?
No. Let's talk about that.
Stealth makes sense in a first-person shooter?
Let's talk about that, because I think the stealth is no fun in first-person shooters. I think it's annoying and not fun. It's already annoying enough to have the backline attackers that we have in the game, but I think they're smarter designs than just going pure stealth. I think Tracer, to a big degree, Reaper and Genji, they do what you want a stealth player to do without being so freaking annoying and being invisible. Yeah. I don't think we need it or want it.
Yeah. Well said. Everything Scott said, plus one.
Wouldn't you argue that the design of these characters, I feel like that's a design philosophy there. I know what he said as much, but I just get the feeling that, sure, this has been on the table. I'm 100% sure they have talked about what is stealth like in this game, and I'll bet they just kept coming back to, can we be a little more creative than that? Can we come up with other ways to get in the back line and to surprise people from the rear? And Reaper's just like a revelation in terms of that kind of gameplay.
He has invulnerability for a short period of time, which gets him wherever he wants to go.
Yeah, I
agree. I think there's other ways to do what stealth essentially does in a lot of games, which is just allow you to get to places on the map that you wouldn't be able to get to normally, right? But the problem is when you can just appear behind someone in a first-person shooter, there is like no response. So you have to be a very weak character in all other respects if you had the stealth ability. And maybe one day we see something along those lines where someone is just really, really squishy, doesn't have a lot of, they can't really move around too quickly, and they can pop up and they can maybe gank somebody, but they're going to go down. And I just hope we don't see that, because I agree with you guys. I think it doesn't work as well in this genre of game.
Oh, and looking for shimmers and just, I just hate it. I hate it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I won't say that the spy isn't done pretty well in TF2, given that he can employ stealth, and the way they handle it is okay. But he's still the most annoying thing in that game, and I can't deal with it. I don't want to play that guy. Actually, the way that do they wait? No, he doesn't go full stealth, does he? Are there times when he goes full stealth? Yeah, there is. He can go full stealth, but he also does the thing where he impersonates somebody else. That kind of thing is kind of cool. I wouldn't mind an impersonation mechanic in the game, but I don't want. I just don't want invisible people. It already sucks in Heroes. Let's not do it here.
Wait, Team Fortress had an invisible guy, right?
Yeah, that's what we're just talking about.
Yeah, the spy.
Oh, sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
No, 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 you're fine. I think the spy. I think the spy did invisibility.
I didn't play a lot of TF2, so I don't know.
I think he did a little bit of both. He was like an impersonator and invisibility. But now it's been so long, I don't remember.
I just remember him from the little mobile game where they had the TF2 team.
Oh, what was that game, dude?
Heroes Academy.
Kind of in the mood for that.
Hero Academy, yeah. So they had the TF2 team, and it had the little guy would get behind you and backstab you and stuff. Yeah.
I don't believe you can go stealth. I think it's just the disguise mechanic.
Was that it? Oh. Okay. Maybe I remember it wrong. But man,
chat room's questioning, and I just pulled up the wiki because it's been a while since I played TF2 as well.
Yeah, I couldn't remember. But I'll tell you what. Hero Academy. Oh, man. That was so much fun.
You know, you can download that game on Steam and play it like on your computer.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, here it is.
It
doesn't
quite translate as well though, because the best thing about Hero Academy was that you would make a bunch of moves and then put your phone back in your pocket.
Yep.
And then when next time you were kind of sitting around, you'd pull it back out and you'd have all these moves to make, you know.
Looks like they have enough.
There was a time where I had like 60 games going at any given moment.
I remember those days. It was so much fun, dude. It was such a great game.
I played the hell out of that game. Yeah.
Last update was December 6, 2014, so I don't know how much
I called it Nerds with Friends, cuz you had Words with Friends, and this was Nerds with Friends.
Yeah, I do love that game. All right, anyway, I may have to play that again.
Now I really want to play it too.
Yeah, I'm in the mood. Quick note that next week, specifically Tuesday, and I think I'll probably release it the same day, I'm going to sit down and have an interview about Overwatch with one of the devs on the team. Michael Chu is his name, and we will be talking probably 20, 30 minutes or so Tuesday morning sometime. I'll put it out on the feed. So if you're interested in more and want to hear some of the perspective of the team themselves, check back in Tuesday for that. Let's do this right here.
Sweet.
What's this? Right here. Whoop. Here we go.
Hear ye, hear ye.
Why, it's the Town Crier.
All right, Town Crier means one thing only. Well, two things, emails and calls. If you want to leave us a voicemail, 801-471-0462, or email us theinstance@gmail.com. Let's start with calls. This one's about mages.
Hi, guys. This is Butch, and I'm calling for the Instance. They were talking about on the last episode about the mage that's throwing around all the blue magic, and I know somebody in the live stream had mentioned that it could be Khadgar, and Patrick was saying, well, it's probably a new character that he's outraged, you know, joking around, but at the same time, there are a lot of mages in the lore that it possibly could be. It could be Antonitis, Jaina's master. I was even possibly throwing around maybe it's like a young Ronin. I don't know if exactly the timeline would fit, but then again, you know, it is a movie. So, there's a number of possibilities that could be that there are famous mages that are there. I don't know. I just wanted to see your guys' thoughts and see, you know, toss around who that mage possibly could be, because I feel personally that it'd be interesting to possibly see Antonitis or maybe Ronin in a movie capacity. Thanks, guys. Thank you for the show.
And
Bye.
I think those names he's looking for all fit within that time frame.
Was Antonitis alive during this time?
I believe so.
Was he?
Yeah. He's
supposed
damn
to be
old
the Warcraft.
Yeah,
right?
Plus he's ancient.
Yeah, he's really old when he's training Jaina.
Yeah. He dies during that game, doesn't he?
Isn't
that when he dies?
Which one?
In Warcraft 3?
Oh, in Warcraft 3, he dies in Warcraft 3, that is correct.
I mean, it's hard to tell if he's Antonitis, because he's casting all these spells, and I don't see him getting free fireballs.
But Antonitis also has the long mustache-y thing, right? So, does that guy have that?
No, he's young. He seriously looks like he's about 18 in this.
I thought we knew that it was Khadgar.
I don't think we know. Do we know?
We don't know? Okay.
If chat room will correct us, but I don't think we know yet.
Could be wrong.
And my problem, or the reason we brought it up in the first place, is I just don't like that he looks like some kind of 20-something millennial hipster man. And then
he looks pretty young. I don't know about Antonitis. Antonitis is old the entire time.
Yeah. Mouse Divided reminded me. Yeah, Antonitis is extremely old, like over 300. So he's just perpetually the old gray wizard.
Yeah, he's
see him represented in Warcraft.
He's magically old, right? Like that's
we've never seen young Antonitus.
Yeah.
Yeah, which isn't to say that they might decide, who cares, we want a sexy Antonitus for Warcraft, but...
It could be. Listen, Yoda was always a shriveled up booger, so it doesn't matter how old he was. It didn't matter. Like, oh, here he is in the prequels 30 years earlier, still looks like a shriveled up booger. So,
he looked like he, I don't know, that episode one puppet looked like it was on meth.
It did, dude. It does wrong not with that episode hold one up. Puppet. It is bad. So bad. All right,
yeah,
we got
it. It was the one time in the prequels where I was like, yeah, CG, let's switch it to CG. It looks so much better now. Thank you.
All right, I'm going to read an email. This came to us from Meatball Sub here there on the Eldrathalus realm. He says, longtime listener of the show. In fact, I make it a point to listen even when I'm not subscribed to WoW, especially now that you cover multiple Blizzard titles. Hey, Meatball Sub, how about a 5-star review on iTunes? That'd be great.
You guys have a lot. He may have left one.
Yeah, that's true. I've recently... Yeah, we do have a lot. I've recently gotten back into WoW after taking a long break around that time Hellfire Citadel came out. Oh, I haven't even told you guys what I'm doing in WoW right now. I'll tell you in a second. Anyway, like many, I have had an on-and-off relationship with WoW over the past few years. Legion has me excited once again. With all of the negativity surrounding the current content, I thought I'd ask what you guys are interested in most in Legion. For me, it's the Survival Hunter revamp. My first max level character in vanilla was a hunter, though I stopped playing the class entirely once BC arrived. The new changes coming have me stoked to max out a hunter again. It reminds me of the old times when a raptor strike with a slow two-hander could one-shot cloth ears in PvP. I really look forward to seeing Legion's rendition live. Thanks for all your hard work. I am most looking forward to the class revamps as well. Maybe in second place would be the legendary weapon stuff. Or the artifact weapon stuff is really interesting.
Yeah, the artifact weapons. Yeah.
But
I'm just really excited for PvP, honestly. I don't know if I'm ever going to get back to raiding. I don't know if that's in my future anymore. I definitely will do the content, but I don't know if I'm going to be a twice a week guy ever again. You know what I mean?
Don't you feel like the formula has to change a bit before? Because I'm in the same boat. I don't know either. I need the formula to be changed up because right now it's just... You need to know the mechanics. You all move at the same place. You all know when to do the thing you got to do, and then you hopefully kill the guy. Oh, it's a DPS race. We don't have enough gear. Let's try again next week. Like, it's kind of rinse and repeat right now, and if they change up the formula, I'm more interested in that, and right now it doesn't seem like that's...
Well, at this point, the only real draw to raiding for me is just hanging out with all the people and the jokes and the fun and the furt raid silliness that goes on.
It's great.
And I definitely do miss that, for sure. I just don't know if that's enough of a draw for me right now to be carving time out when it's really difficult to do so.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it wasn't like the reason why I think PvP works for me so well is that I can get like one or two guys. We can go into arena just on a whim. Oh, let's just play some arena right now. Or I can just solo queue for Battlegrounds and have a really good time. And that kind of stuff still has that big draw for me. Mm-hmm. And just the changes that they're making seem really exciting. The progression that you'll have, the way things kind of work and operate in Legion just really intrigues me. So I think that's going to be the thing I'm most excited about, most interested in.
What do you think, Garrett? What are you looking forward to?
I am the most excited. I like my WoW lore, and I'm a big elf nerd, so I'm really looking forward to visiting all of these locations from elven lore.
Mm. Yeah.
The art and the aesthetic of everything I'm seeing in Legion just has me geeking out because I love the style.
I'm that way too.
I'm so done with the brown and the dirt and the orc of Draenor. I'm excited to go see a world that is inhabited by beings that like have an appreciation for art. Like they don't build stuff just because they need to live in it. So they slap some bolts on it and cover it and hide. Mm-hmm. Like this is an advanced civilization. I love that kind of stuff in fantasy.
Yeah, I agree. Looking forward to it. Meatball Sub, I hope you are too.
The storyline too of all the scenarios and stuff, that's really exciting as well. I think that's going to scratch the itch of like this, the raiding, what it does for the lore for me is just all of these storylines we're going to get in smaller chunks, you know?
Yeah. And for the first time in a long time, I want to go and do it with lots of characters, not just my main, you know, I want to see what they all are going to do.
I think the last time I was on here, I talked about how in the alpha, I played through the quest for the Death Knight to go get their freaking artifact. And as a Warcraft 3 nerd, I was geeking so hard.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
A lot of fan service in this in this expansion. Yeah.
Redoing all the classes like this though is going to get a lot of people to do that, to go back and play through classes again.
Yeah,
that will be fun for me for sure. I the leveling experience is still as satisfying as it ever was. Even though at this point it feels stale. Like I went back and did, I don't know if you guys all did the 1 through 20 to get your Hearthstone hero, mm-hmm. your paladin.
No, I'm actually doing that now, funny enough.
Yeah.
So
just
I got to 15.
Was so fun.
I haven't knocked out of those last.
You haven't finished it? Oh my god!
It's gotta tear
I'm
through
so
it.
I'm so bored. I don't.
But then you
can. You gotta go back and do it with someone. Yeah, I had a blast doing it.
Are you sure you don't want to hear that new lady paladin say my hammer is something and she's only got a sword? You don't want that.
Well, first of all, I do really want that hero because Uther is boring and I love elves. But
she's all shiny, you know.
Yeah, man. Like
there's a little when you summon your dudes, they shoot out with lasers. It's awesome.
I don't think there was ever a point in World of Warcraft where I was excited as I was when Burning Crusade was announced and Blood Elves and Blood Knights were announced. Like I was just, lore nerd in me. I'm like, yeah, I get to be an evil paladin elf on the Horde side. Sign me up.
Yeah.
So the fact that I can now get a Blood Knight, the leader of the Blood Knights as my hero in Hearthstone, I need to do it. I've leveled enough in WoW. It is an experience I have zero interest in revisiting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's 10 years, man. We've been doing this for a while. Sure. 11 years.
Yeah. But surprisingly, I enjoyed it just as if I'd never done it before other day. When we did it, it was about 4 hours, I think, we spent doing it. And we didn't, I had some heirloom gear on, but we didn't really skip anything. Mm-hmm. Once we got to 15, we just started queuing up and had a blast.
Yeah.
Actually, would have been much faster, but we queued up for a few battlegrounds and got just rolled by Twinks for a while, which was a mistake. Don't do that. Anybody out there?
Yeah, I'm doing an undead because I haven't seen that place since Cataclysm, and I wanted to kind of relive some of those changes. And I think
you probably had a wonderful experience. Yeah, that's fantastic.
It's
out
really
there.
Good questing too. Like the questing's some of the best in that revamp, and I hadn't done any of it. So going to Brill after the big change, and that whole area is just different. And
yeah, the Barons still sucks, so you know.
Barons are the worst. They're the worst.
Don't roll an Orc or a Tauren.
Don't go to Durotar.
Yeah.
It's really boring.
Not a good time. Paul Keener wrote in, final email says, do you have to get everything for a second account for my son, i.e. full game, all of the expansions, Authenticator, etc.? Well, Paul, yes, but keep in mind that the game itself is now, $39 for, and you get everything previous? Like it's just
I thought you could buy just Legion or Warlords, and it just gives you everything.
Yeah, and then that doesn't include Legion, of course. But I think that's the current deal, so it's actually not a big deal that way. You'll get the entirety of the game.
Yeah, it's not like you have to buy six different
every
titles.
Expansion. Yeah.
You just buy Warlords, and you're good to go.
Yeah, there's your game. That's World of Warcraft, baby. Just play the damn thing. Thanks for your emails. Thanks for your thoughts. And thanks for your phone calls. 801-471-0462. theinstance@gmail.com is, of course, the email address. You can send your attachments there as well. Before we kick out of here, let's go around the table. Let's start with our guest, Garrett, who's, none of us are strangers to each other. But in case you're listening and don't know where to find Garrett's fine works, Garrett, where should
again?
They go? Yeah, who is this dude?
This is
I don't
Bill's
recognize
guy.
Him with his hair over his forehead.
I know, it's weird.
Freaking me out.
Freaking me out, too.
I'm feeling a little emo today. I'm gonna put on some My Chemical Romance after we're done with this show.
Great.
Everything I can do can be found over at amove.tv. The Angry Chicken, if you'd like Hearthstone, Into the Nexus, if you like Heroes. Again, we just had Dills and Scott on last night to celebrate our 100th episode on Into the Nexus, so go check that out. Yep. But the big thing I want to promote right now is CreateCon. I'm putting on a small convention in Orlando this July. Go to createconvention.net for more information. We're having a live Angry Chicken, a live Into the Nexus. Tom Merritt and Jenny Josephson are coming, so we're doing a live Star Wars podcast. Brian Brushwood and Justin Robert Young are coming, so we're having a live Night Attack. It's going to be a really good time. It's the first time I'm putting on one of these things. So check it out. Come on out to Orlando and maybe hit up a park or two afterwards.
There it is. America's wiener just waiting for you. And I mean Florida, not you. I meant Florida.
I am actually, my official title is America's Wiener.
Well, good, because I've been calling you that for a long time. It's nice to know I can do it in the open now. Dills, what's going on with you, sir?
A couple things. The YouTube channel is live, so you can go check that out. It's youtube.com/WillyDillsSF, twitch.tv/WillyDillsSF, and the personal Patreon is all up and running. So basically all the stuff that I've been promising people I was going to get to.
Mm-hmm.
I finally got to it. So here you go.
Nice. Yeah,
it's happening.
I like it. Go check it out. Patreon.com/WillyDills. Is that right?
YouTube.com/WillyDillsSF. So we're still keeping the SF in there just to make me feel like I'm still a San Franciscan somehow.
Somehow. In some way.
But we're living in Texas. So it's basically just a guy who doesn't know what the hell to do in Austin figuring it out live on YouTube.
Nice.
I understand right now the quality is not that great because, you know, I'm new to the whole thing. I'm using my friggin' iPhone at this point. We'll get better equipment at some point, but for now, bear with me, people.
Yeah. Stick with it. Bear with it. Check it out. For us, man, there's a million things going on. And make sure you check out all of our Heroes podcasts. You talked about Into the Nexus, but check out Stormcast with Dills and those folks over there. It's fantastic. If you haven't heard of my other show about Heroes as well, but apparently we all like Heroes. So I have a show called Core that I do every week as well. Fill up your iPods and your phones and your whatevers with more Heroes goodness by getting one of those shows.
I actually talked to a few people who say they listen to all of the shows. And I was like, wow,
I think there's a
you
bunch.
Are a true hero of the storm.
Yeah,
I think there's a lot of crossover.
I think so, too. And it's a really great extended community for that game. I feel like we're helping build that in a way, and it's super nice. So go check out all those shows if you get a second. That's going to do it. TheInstance.net is the webpage. Go there. All the links to everything are there. Leave us reviews on wherever you get your podcasts. Hopefully ones you like us. And if you don't, well, that's okay too. We'll take whatever you got. TheInstance.net is that site. Once again, at Instance Show on Twitter, at Scott Johnson, at Willie Dills, at Garrett Art. And for Terpster and Patrick, at not Patrick, at _T. Find more great shows just like this, frogpants.com. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Dills, and for our guest Garrett. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Paladin Pose provokes piles of pushback. It's the Overly Dramatic News. I'm Hunts the Wind. The pre-Legion lull may still be in full force on Azeroth, but unfortunately some people will still look for any excuse to get riled up over the smallest controversy. Such was the case this week at the Gurubashi Arena in Stranglethorn Vale. It's been traditional there for the victors of battle to stand upon a dais and salute the spectators, facing the crowd with both arms raised to the sky. But traditions, no matter how old, cannot last forever. 3 days ago, for the first time, a female Tauren paladin claimed victory over a slew of opponents. This paladin, who goes by the name Sketcher, climbed atop the podium, but instead of the traditional victory pose, turned her back to the audience, looked coyly over her shoulder, and used her tail to mischievously wave at them. Many of those in attendance chuckled, and some found it impressive that she was able to change the mood of the arena so quickly after the carnage they had just witnessed. But others were horrified and accused her of playing to stereotypes, saying her saucy pose diminished the impact of the victory she had just worked so hard to achieve. The story has since then gone quite viral, with people taking sides from all races, continents, and even worlds. Reached for comment earlier today, Sketcher was unrepentant, saying, quote, "Look, love, I'm a female Tauren. That standard full frontal victory pose? For me, it would have been utterly inappropriate."
Broadcasting across all Azeroth, I'm Hunts the Wind. Check out the archives at OverlyDramaticNews.com or follow me on Twitter at Hunts the Wind.
Greetings, gamers. This is Mewcow, a resident expert on a common gamer condition called altitis. Grinding levels on another alt? Why not tackle the Gorgon Trophies of Glory? In a previous segment, I explained how Gorgon was a great zone to grind when you were on the road to level 100. In particular, though, a meaty chunk of experience comes in the form of trophy collecting, specifically from larger game. There are 8 targets in total, all a fair harder challenge than your typical questing monster, but worth the effort. You will find them making a sort of circle around High Pass on the map, and each one drops a quest starter that you'll want to hold onto. First, there are the plant-based monsters, Biolante and Fungo Praetorian. After these, you'll want to keep an eye out for Charl Doomwing and Roradin the Sky Terror, 2 flying Rylex. Craterlord Igneous, Erosion the Violent, and Desiccus of the Deadpools are more elemental-based monsters and have hard hits to prove it. Finally, Kargak's Devourer will finish the roundup. Once complete, head to your garrison outpost in Gorgrent. Here, you can finally activate all 8 quests and turn them in all at once. This allows you to first pop an experience potion and the more potent elixir, and get an easy level experience in the process. Bring a friend to tackle these critters, and you'll be done before the mini-mosses know what hit them. If you have questions, tips, or want to discuss the topic further, find us on Twitter at AltitisNet, and show notes can be found on altitis.net. On behalf of the Alt Army, we hope you find this information useful in the treatment of your altitis.
Oh, Ludra the Mage here!
And I'm Ben the Mage! Now please,
please, I'm begging you, don't do it again.
Then you gotta narrow it down.
Well, okay, we have a team building with the word howling. So I was hoping you wouldn't pick...
Pick what, your brain? Pick?
Come on, do I have to say it?
You're gonna have to say it then, because, I mean, there are so many things.
Moon, moon. While Eludra is singing Moon Moon again, make sure to check out episode 83 of Battle Pets, rife with secret technical difficulties, where we talk boss battles, read emails, and revisit Moon Moon. Are you done?
Yes, Ben, because in honor of this week's show, I have a new song. Moon Mom! Moon Mom! Moon Moon Mom! Moon Mom! Moon Mom! Moony Moony Mommy! Moon Mom!
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.